No, I'm not for sale.
You are Locked On Colts, your daily Indianapolis Colts podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to Locked On Colts, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Matt Dainley. Thank you guys for joining me again for a third time this week. And today we got a great guest, Conrad Bruner from 1070 The Fan. Conrad, thanks for joining me, man.
Anytime, boss.
So you have a specific point of view as well. And when we get into this, what to look forward to into training camp after OTAs and minicamp and so on, what may be the most interesting storyline for you as you go into this? What is it that, aside from injury stuff, what is it that really has you thinking out loud about some of these some of this roster?
Well, to me the most interesting things are injury stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got to see what Andrew Luck is or isn't doing, when training camp opens, because so much depends upon that. You need to see where Langford is. You need to see if Clayton Gethers is on any type of road to recovery or what his situation is. So, there are a lot of areas physically that you really are going to have to monitor on a practice-to-practice basis. But in terms of position groups and such, really need to see, obviously, the defense is going to be job one, priority one, focus one, all through all of this, settling out who's going to play where. Where is Hankins going to play? Because he's not really a true nose. He's more of a, he's not a zero technique. He's more of a one or a three. He's actually played a little five here and there. They've got to figure out, are they going to switch their people around situationally? Are they going to have a static line, a fixed line? I don't know. We got to see how that sorts out. Got to figure out how the linebackers are going to play, who's going to play where, especially inside. And also that secondary, because Malik Hooker missing the offseason work, the OTAs, while he was recovering. He's supposed to be good for camp, mm-hmm. but he's also supposed to be a starter, which means he's got a lot of ground to make up. And frankly, so does Quincy Wilson. So you're looking at two rookie starters projected in the secondary who are going to have to cover an awful lot of ground, metaphorically and literally.
Yeah, I agree. And you spoke about Hankins. His move around the defensive line thus far in the offseason is really interesting to me, because that was the plug, right? When they brought him in, he was going to be the true zero tech that the Colts needed to really implement Pagano's 3-4 scheme. And that was supposed to be the building block for the rest of the group. But now that they've been moving him around, primarily at a three tech, from what I hear in the offseason program, that just makes everything more interesting, because, they've had Al Woods starting there around the zero. And, what do they do with this? And then not only that, but what does that mean for when it comes down to the cut down? That makes everything more interesting, because they've ultimately got more pieces on the outside, or, maybe in the three tech as well. But that just makes everything more interesting when it comes down to it, that, who's going to be that zero tech for him, because Hankins was billed as that in the offseason.
I think it's fairly safe to say that David Perry is very much on the bubble as a 16-game starter a year ago. Mm-hmm. I think it's a really critical camp for Henry Anderson, because, he really flashed as a rookie, never really got off the ground last year coming back. He's at that point now, it's more than a year removed from the knee surgery, so he should be, physically able to get back to where he is. But, for example, if Langford and Henry Anderson are both good to go, well, there you've got natural three and five right there to flank your nose. So then it becomes a matter of, in this hybrid 3-4, can you play your nose more as a three, play Anderson as sort of a three, play Hankins as a three with different responsibilities, and then, of course, your rush linebacker is going to be, in effect, the fourth lineman in those four down situations. But here's the thing, Matt, we're worrying about things that probably don't have far reaching impact, because they only play their base defense about a third of the time.
Right.
So, and last year, for example, I think it was four games, they started two defensive linemen. So the mixing and matching that goes on is really, really crazy to see nowadays.
I agree. There's some of those guys that are, they obviously are position players, but you see what they're going to offer you know, outside of just on the defense with this group. Barkevious Mingo being one. I know they're kind of, you know, if you want to say they're high on him, I guess that's, you know, whatever. But they definitely think that that guy can have some sort of a resurgence for his career. And then you've got a guy like Nate Hairston, who ultimately, I think, was brought in to plug into that nickel corner position. But those two guys are expected to have real special team impacts. Do you see them actually getting anything in towards a rotation just from this, you know, 30,000 point or 30,000 foot view at this point?
I would say more Mingo than Hairston. I didn't really get a good feel from Hairston on the field in the nickel defense a lot. Mm-hmm. They still feel good about the veteran holdovers they've got. You know, Rashawn Melvin was really solid, not great, but he was a revelation,
right,
filling in last year. And they still got Daryl Moore, so they still have a couple veterans they can put, you know, in that spot if they need to. So I think Harrison's got some people to beat out to get into the slot mix right now. But Mingo, man, you look at their linebacker group when they're sort of standing next to each other on the practice field, and just from the eye test, Mingo looks like a player. I mean, he's bigger, he's obviously fast and athletic. Mm-hmm. It just hasn't translated for him, and I honestly don't know why. Obviously, Gleavy got hurt. You know, he had the chest injury that put him back, and he was playing catch up the rest of the time. New England, you know, they just want him to be a special teamer, and so he was a special teamer, really good one. Mm-hmm. If he's nothing more, Matt, than a really good special teams player, he's worth it.
Yeah, I agree.
But he also looks like a guy they can plop in there in that outside mix, you know, maybe for coverage, maybe for pass rush. That's the thing. There are so many moving parts in that linebacker group. So that's a critical area to watch in camp.
Mm-hmm. And he could be one of those that kind of stands out more, because I think people aren't really assuming that he's going to do much in that role as far as actually as a linebacker. So for him, if he does get any kind of a rotation or whatever, and he does end up playing pretty well, that could really help him out. Not necessarily resurgence, but it could definitely keep him a spot on this roster for, you know, maybe another couple years. This competition mantra is just, to me, and I think a lot of outsiders is really exciting, because it really feels like Ballard believes it. It feels like the roster, the team believes it. And it really could have some serious implications for training camp to get these guys. It could be really exciting. I mean, they've already said that this is the most competitive roster they've had under Chuck Pagano. And I don't think that that's much of a stretch, nor do I think that's really a revelation for a whole lot. But is there a guy on this roster you think might be the Edwin Jackson of last year? You know, the kind of the guys that we're sitting around watching going, that guy's going to get himself a roster spot, and, you know, may not be noticed a lot nationally.
Well, you know, I don't know if Chester Rogers would qualify as a surprise or not, because he was on the roster last year and he had some moments, but he's really jumped out. I mean, really jumped out in the off-season stuff.
I love
Clearly that. A lot more comfortable, a lot more confident. He's got good size, good hands, and he's really looking like it's going to be tough for him to make it, frankly, because, you know, depending on what Dorsett does, mm-hmm. you know, they've obviously, you know, they brought in, you know, the free agents. They got a couple of guys that are holdover starters with Hilton and Moncrief. So, you know, it's going to be a tough group to crack, but he's looked really good. To me, it'll be interesting to see. Turbin was a guy that was used as a specialist a lot last year, not really used a lot in base offense. I think you might see a lot more of Turbin alternating in a more true two-back situation, not two backs at a time, but you know what I'm saying, a tag team situation at running back, mm-hmm. as Frank Gore gets along in age. And, you know, defensively, I don't – okay, here's a name. Here's a name for you, John Bostic, mm-hmm. a veteran player, been around, but at that inside linebacker spot, inheriting the job from DeQuell Jackson. – My original thought was that maybe Anthony Walker, the fifth-round pick from Northwestern, could step right into that role. Mm-hmm. But Bostic is light years ahead of everybody right now and has really drawn raves. So if he could stay healthy. And here's another guy, Sean Spence, at the other inside linebacker spot. Really athletic, can really run and cover. And these are guys that were a little bit of afterthoughts in other places, but have the right skill sets to plug right in for the Colts.
Mm-hmm. And those, I mean, with their past being having injuries and stuff like that, if these guys can, you know, stay healthy by all means. These are both really good football players. I mean, they weren't bad by any means. They just had injuries. They weren't able to get past them necessarily. And, you know, last year, Sean Spence looked really good in Tennessee, I thought. I think that Bostic, you know, from what I've heard down there, that he's been able to acclimate into a coverage role as well, not just being the hitter, you know, that everybody perceives him to be. But, you know, this running back group really has me excited. You know, last year they used Turbin a little bit as a fullback as well, you know, with him and Gore. I think they primarily used it inside the 5-yard line. But that's an interesting combination as well, and I agree with you. I think that, you know, Gore's touches might see a bit of a decrease. Turbin may be the rotation guy in there with him. If he needs a break on, you know, 8 to 10 play drive or something like that. But a lot of this, you know, the Josh Ferguson background from last year, and then you've got another guy like Dalton Crossan, who's gotten a lot of pub and a lot of talk this offseason already. Is there a front runner you think to maybe land that fourth running back spot if they decide to keep four, which I think they have for the most part over the past few years?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think it's going to have to be the draft pick. You know, they're going to have to give this kid a chance. Maybe he'll be a practice squad. They may only keep three. They're going to have to keep extra players somewhere. They might have to keep a fourth tight end because, assuming Eric Swoop's your third guy, mm-hmm. Maybe even your second guy, you're going to need some solidity there. And that's where another name comes up: Darrell Daniels, who's an undrafted free agent from University of Washington, a really athletic guy. Didn't really play to his ability, a little bit of an underachiever in college, mm-hmm. but has come in here with a real chip on his shoulder to prove what he can do. And he's another one of those guys with every bit of the physical ability, size, speed, hands, all of it, you know, to be an NFL tight end. So three running backs, maybe four. That's going to – I'll put it this way. Last year, part of the problem with the running back group is they spent so much time trying to make Josh Ferguson succeed.
Right.
And he just wasn't going to. He just wasn't going to. He looked great in the offseason work when there was no tackling and no pads and no hitting. But once it started being football, he went nowhere. And they couldn't believe their eyes. And it was like it took them so long to become convinced that he couldn't help them. That it got. I mean, you had Todman, you had Turbin, you had proven solid veterans that were sitting there begging for these opportunities, and they kept throwing Ferguson out there, and it really kind of got in the way.
Yeah, I agree. I was a big supporter of Todman getting some more snaps. I mean, he wasn't, you know, a guy who was ever going to get more than 5 carries a game anyways, but he was definitely a guy I thought that deserved it over Ferguson. I mean, Ferguson, we know that he could not run between the tackles. Even when he would get out on the edge, out in the flats or whatever, he didn't do anything with himself in space. He didn't get anything after the catch hardly, and he was just a real disappointment. I wasn't high on him when they brought him in. I think there was kind of a mixed group about, you know, we like him, we don't, but we know the Colts liked him, and that was something that,
well, we know Gregson liked him.
right yep, this is true. So
but see, here's the point about the running game. I really thought last year, because they brought in two veterans, they were actually going to divide the running game up a little bit more. They weren't going to ride Frank Gore like a mule as the primary back. And even though he got 1,000 yards, you know, he had to carry 265 times. He averaged under 4 a carry. And yes, he got his 1,000. Fine. The running game was still terrible.
Right.
It was still ineffective. And for this running game to actually become part of the offense in terms of being a threat, something that the defense has to regard. Right now, the defense lines up, and if you're going to give it to Frank Gore 20 times a game, they're going to absolutely say, fine, because we know even if we're in completely the wrong defense and we miss 5 tackles, he's not getting more than 12 yards.
Right.
So, you know, he's just not going to hurt you. So they've really got to get other guys involved and to make this running game a true threat within the offense, not only for Andrew Luck's health, but for the success of the overall unit.
I agree. They desperately need that now, because with Doyle, I mean, just in thinking of how Chudzinski likes to run this offense a little bit, you know, with Doyle being the number two, but kind of being the, you know, the better of the two tight ends last year between he and Dwayne Allen, yet he was still the number two and was able to, you know, fall into that H-back type of role a little bit more. You know, do they still use him like that if he's the number one, clearly the number one, which he is? You know, who else do they put into that H-back role? Is that a spot for Swoop, you know, maybe a little more? Or do they want to, you know, what do they want to do with him? So this will be interesting because when you have this running back group the way it is, a lot of that will dictate what you do with other positions as well. Primarily, I think, the tight end role. Because you want them playing off of each other, and obviously they're both going out into the flats or up the seam or whatever for a pass. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how those two situations roll out. I agree with you on that, most definitely.
Well, Swoop is such a gifted athlete that you could almost say that if you want to draw a comparison, you could say with Swoop and Doyle, they can do a little bit of what they did with Fleener and Allen.
Right.
You have sort of the semi-wide receiver tight end who can be a matchup nightmare on the outside and downfield, and you have, you know, the banger, you know, and the key to that for Jack is being a better inline on the line blocker. He was very good as sort of a lead fullback type and in that H-back role, but he's going to have to be better straight up, you know, helping out that right tackle. But if he can do that, and there's no reason that's the thing with Jack Doyle. Whenever you say he needs to be able to do fill in the blank, whatever that is, he made himself do it. And that's why he's the guy they kept.
Yep. And to much of the appreciation of a lot of the fans, because I think that a lot of people were worried the way that contract situation started and thought he might get away from the team. They'd have been in a world of hurt if they did, from what I'm seeing. Jack Muhort is another interesting guy. Now, they have been, you know, allowing him to rest quite a bit this off season.
You know, that's an interesting way of looking at it. Allowing him to rest. Yeah.
Well, we know that he's
been
had...
encouraging him to let his knee heal. Yeah.
Well, we know that he's had injuries, obviously, but you know, they're not trying to pull him back all at once in pointless workouts in the summer is more or less what I'm getting at. And they've had some guys move in there like Schwenke and Vujinovic. Apparently, is there another offensive lineman that you see maybe getting kind of a nod as a rotational guy outside of Vujinovic throughout this entire?
We're trying to figure out who the rights is going to be. You know, who's going to be the swing guy that can play all over the place and really bail you out?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if for a moment you thought it might be Haig, but I think they really want him to lock in at right guard. It's looking like it might be Denzel Good. He's less a tackle than a guard from his experience, but he obviously is big enough to be a tackle. He just needs to be trained up. Vujinovic is a guy that they've been playing extensively in the offseason. So he's obviously higher on the depth chart than a lot of people thought. Schwenke wasn't around in the OTA, so he's been dealing with some stuff.
Right.
And obviously Muhort, he's one of those guys we're going to have to see on the field in training camp because the projection was that he'd be, you know, pretty much okay the offseason program, but he wasn't, and he wasn't even around at all for minicamp. So a little bit of wait and see there for Jack. And the important thing to remember, because there's been a lot of talk about the offensive line, Matt, and if, you know, when Irsay comes out and says the offensive line is fixed, which is just such an absurd thing for the owner to say, even if he really believed it, which he can't possibly actually believe that. You got to remember, they might feel like they have the pieces in place that will eventually become a good offensive line, but they aren't all in place yet. And the important thing to remember is their best offensive lineman, unless you think it's Ryan Kelly, but is Anthony Costanzo.
Mm-hmm.
And we have yet to see Anthony Costanzo be anything other than glaringly average.
Yeah.
So there is a very, you know, the ceiling for that line isn't particularly high.
I don't disagree with you, although I think that the Colts would be in a really struggling, bad situation without Costanzo. I agree that he hasn't been elite by any means, but as far as the rest of this offensive line goes, you know, if you're comparing him just to the people in house, he has been. So,
oh no, he's, like I said, he's their best offensive lineman. Ryan Kelly will be.
Yeah,
he
I
might
agree.
Become their best offensive lineman this year.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, when the guy that plays left tackle is basically your number one guy, he's the guy that gets paid. He's the key to it all.
Yep.
And I would say he's no better than middle of the pack. Regarding, you know, relative to other NFL left tackles.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that at all. This cornerback group, you know, we kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, but I guess I'm just not as excited about only bringing in one guy that you potentially think is a starter, another guy who you think is a year or two away, and then you've still got a lot of the same pieces there as far as starters. Now, I'm a big fan of Rashawn Melvin and how he came in and played last year. I think that he offers a lot for them in the beginning of the season this year. If Quincy Wilson can't go, I think Melvin is a guy who can definitely start opposite Vontae Davis. But the opposite of that is what is really, in my opinion, the issue is Vontae Davis. Now, I know he's looked well
right
thus far in offseason, but he still has an injury or two or three, it seems like, every single year. If he could, if he doesn't stay healthy, this secondary is still in a lot of trouble.
Oh, no, there's no question. I mean, even if he does, there are question marks everywhere. But understand this about Vontae Davis this season. It's a contract year.
Right.
So the little nicks and tweaks and aches and owies that might have, you know, caused him to sit out an extra series or even a game here and there, that ain't going to happen this year. Mm-hmm. Vontae knows he's got to have a big – he's got to have – really the last year and a half, he's not been very good. He was, I would say, largely a disappointment last year. And he's going to have to really bounce back. He's a little bit like Costanzo. You know, they need him to be an elite guy. And he was there for about a year. He had one really strong year. But since then, he's really tailed off, some due to injuries and some to it just slipping.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, they want to mix up some zone. Monachino wants to mix in a little more zone with the press man, and that's not obviously Vontae's thing. I mean, he wants – and Quincy Wilson's the same way. These guys both just want to line up on their guys, jam them with the line of scrimmage, try to play the physical game with them and cover them.
Mm-hmm.
When they have to think about, you know, what the routes are and which routes they're covering and which, you know, which way they go when the receiver plants his left foot, that sort of thing.
Right.
That's where they run into trouble. So this, assuming Vontae, let's just say he's in a contract year, he's a good player, he's going to be solid. Well, you're still looking at, you know, two rookies. TJ Green, I think, is on the verge of fading out of the picture completely. This could be his last chance if he can't play strong safety. And Darius Butler, you know, Darius Butler right now looks like the captain of the secondary. So, and he's playing essentially a new position. So no, nothing but question marks back there.
Yeah, and you touched on a couple of things real quick that I wanted to touch on as well. You know, was Mathias Farley getting the work with the ones and twos? Do you think that was more of a message to TJ Green from the coaching staff? Or do you think that's just, you know, he just played better, plain and simple?
He's a better – right now he's a better football player.
Mm-hmm.
He's not nearly the athlete. He doesn't have nearly the potential. TJ Green – ideally, they would have liked him to be the free safety, but he can't. He
right.
just can't. I mean, they, and that's interesting because they talk about Malik Hooker like he's a 10-year veteran. He's played less free safety than TJ Green had coming in here.
Right.
But they feel like he's going to step in and start. And now they want TJ Green to be a little bit more of what Clayton Gethers was going to be as a strong safety. And while TJ Green will run, if you're straight ahead of him, he will run right at you and he will hit you hard. Elusive players, if he's got to chase somebody down, he's just not been good in open space. He's not been a good tackler. He misses tackles like crazy. He blows assignments like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a kid that boy, this is a year they could desperately, desperately use him to step forward. We haven't seen signs of it yet.
Yeah, we really need his physicality because I think with the scariness of Clayton Gethers' injury, realistically, they're going to need another
yeah.
physical guy. And TJ Green, like you said, he is good when he can come up and actually make the play somewhere close to being in the box. Anything outside of that, he is a very average tackler at best. And that is not
good. Yeah, he doesn't have the lateral movement in space. He doesn't seem to have the instincts, you know, when he's out there on the island.
Right.
And even though he brought with him a reputation of being a big hitter,
mm-hmm.
which he is, there's a big difference between being a big hitter and a good tackler.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think this might open the door for Tyvus Powell to legitimately see a lot of action this year, the new guy that they just brought in.
Yeah, we're going to have to wait and see. I haven't seen much out of him yet. But, yeah, one, you talk about the names sort of down the list. That's definitely one to keep an eye on.
Absolutely. And, you know, kind of what you touched on there with the nickel spot or with the other safety there is Darius Butler. Depending on how Hooker ultimately looks in camp, I think they, you know, they have to see significant playing ability from him, I think, before they say, nope, you're our guy. Butler, you know, let's say that Hooker does start there. Gethers is healthy. I mean, there's a lot of what ifs here, but what does Butler do? I mean, Butler was a guy that they re-signed hoping that he was a safety. Okay. Then they draft Malik Hooker. At the time, they assumed that Gethers was going to be better, I think. And now we have, you know, Darius Butler, a guy that is a little too slow, even for the nickel position, I think, although he can be effective in spurts. But he really is a safety this year. Does this leave him sort of, you know, a positionless player at some point throughout the season?
I think they're looking at him to sort of be the Mike Adams, you know, whereas Mike was more of a pure free safety with Gethers. And they will talk about how they like to interchange their safeties. They don't want to tip the defense based on their safety positioning, blah, blah, blah. But did anybody not know that Clayton Gethers was the strong safety and Mike Adams was the free safety last year? I mean, it's, you know, they're not fooling anybody with that. But Darius Butler is going to be sort of in that role, except not playing free safety. Mm-hmm. The question then becomes, okay, he's not really big. He's kind of a small guy to be a strong safety. And if Malik Hooker's your free safety, how did these parts all fit together? That's where TJ Green comes in as a bigger, stronger, faster guy. But they desperately need a veteran guy to organize that, you know, the back four. Mm-hmm. And right now, Darius Butler is the best they've got at that. And you want to talk about scary. Talk about putting Quincy Wilson, Malik Hooker, and TJ Green with Vontae as your back four and ask him to play zone. Oh, yeah. Dear God.
Yeah, that could be scary. I mean, we may get surprised, but, you know, on the surface, that looks like something that they really don't want to do at this point for sure.
No. When you have young secondary players, you just want to say you cover him.
Yes.
And that's that.
Very much so. Still here with Conrad Bruner from 1070 The Fan. Bruno, there's, you know, so much love for Chris Ballard right this year. Now, I haven't been able to ask you this, but what is your, from start to now, what do you think about Ballard?
Well, obviously, we don't know how all of the personnel moves are going to work out. We don't know how good a draft this is going to turn out to be. Mm-hmm. You know, new guys always tend to get the benefit of the doubt. And so he's got that until he loses it for some reason. But what I'll say I've been most impressed by with him, and it's not the moves per se, it's how he approaches his job. He doesn't try to be the smartest guy in the room. He doesn't try to trick you or talk. You know, he admits, like, he walked in after the draft and said, "So did you know Malik Hooker was falling your way?" "Oh, hell no. You know, I didn't know that. We didn't envision that in a million years."
Right.
Whereas the last two guys in that chair would never admit that they didn't see that. The first thing out of their mouth, "Well, board was exactly the way we saw it." And that's, you know, so there was this, you know, they felt like they had to be, and Bill Polian was the smartest guy in the room, and Gregson just wanted people to believe he was.
Right.
I think there's a genuineness to Ballard. I think he understands who he is, where he came from, and there's very clearly, even though he is the authority, I think there's a real stronger sense within the personnel group of a team back there, that there are collective decisions being made. It's not just one guy, you know, putting his foot down saying, "This is my guy," and that's that.
Right. Yeah. That great points too. One more question before I let you go. I really appreciate your time today. What about the position coaches, like, you know, Philbin along the offensive line, Schottenheimer there with Luck for a second year, especially through the rehabilitation of his injury. How important do you think a lot of these position coaches are going to be to the team this year?
Well, Philbin's huge, and it's, you know, it's important. Last year, not only was he learning new players in a new situation, he was basically being a position coach for the first time in, I think, 10 years. I don't think he'd been an offensive line coach for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. So he had to really adapt himself to that job again. He seems comfortable back in it now. He knows his guys. He should be a real asset, and I think the same is true of Schottenheimer. You know, we have to wait and see what happens with the quarterback position. To me, his role, his time right now should not be spent with Andrew Luck. It should be spent with the other guys, you know, because I think you really have to, you have to be backed up. You have to be ready with Tolzien or Morris, you know, if Luck's not ready to go. And I, right now, I think the priority until Luck is out there, you got to act like whoever your guy is, whether it's Tolzien, whether it's Morris, and all indications are it would be Tolzien. He's got to be treated like your guy. You've got to prep him like your guy. And if he doesn't take a snap all year and if Luck's healthy, great. That's your best case scenario. But you got to be prepared for anything.
Absolutely. Bruno, thank you so much for your time today. Really enjoyed getting your insight on everything, you know, Colts related up to this point. You know, we're in the thick of a real dark period here, but we're about a month or so, a little bit more than a month from training camp, and that's when it's obviously going to pick up and get significantly more interesting. So thank you for your time today, man.
Thanks for having me, man. Anytime. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. You guys can catch his blog, Bruno's blog, on 1070thefan.com. Guys, make sure you're following Conrad on Twitter at 1070Bruno. Continue to put in those ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts. Those are always great. Had some great shows this week with some great guests. Really appreciate you guys chiming in with your call-ins. Make sure you guys are keeping that up. 574-516-2881. Those are great. Really enjoying doing that, enjoying talking about them on the show. Make sure that you guys are following myself at mdainley_NFL on Twitter. Follow the show at Locked On Colts. You can email me at lockedoncoltspod@gmail.com. And any other way that you guys want to get a hold of me, do that. Always interested to talk with you guys, and love you guys for helping this show grow as much as it has. So thank you guys all for listening, and we'll talk to you soon right here on Locked On Colts.
You are Locked On Colts, your daily podcast on the Indianapolis Colts, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.